You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Students have been making their way back to the UW-La Crosse campus this week. Among the many things they'll be learning this year is the fact that the university's grounds will look completely different in a few years. That's because there are a number of major building projects underway, some beginning this year. Today, to talk about the upcoming changes at UWL and to look ahead at the upcoming school year is Chancellor Joe Gao. So, Chancellor, let's first talk about maybe this most recent round of building projects that at least have gotten the thumbs up from the UW Board of Regents. Still needs approval from the state, but we're looking at $62 million in building projects. Before we start breaking down the different details, I'm wondering if you can just maybe talk about why at this point in time the university identified these three as projects that needed to get done.
You know, we're in the middle of a really unprecedented period in the history of our school where we're able to do a lot of projects. Now, you know, there's many things at work there. I think one of the key things is that our enrollment has increased pretty significantly, you know, over the past, say, 20 years. And also many of the buildings on the campus were built long ago, 50, sometimes, you know, longer. I mean, the Wittig project that you mentioned, that building was created in 1916. So we're coming on 100 years on that building. So there's a lot of those factors, just making sure the facilities are as good as they can be, and then, you know, finding the funding for them. And that's something I think most people can't really appreciate, is some of this money comes from the state, and we're very grateful for that. But much more of it comes from things like fees that people pay to park. When we do improvements to the parking ramp, that's how we fund those. The new residence hall that you mentioned, that will be funded entirely by student housing fees. The rec addition that you also mentioned, that's going to happen by virtue of a student referendum, and they voted, the students, this is, to raise their rec fee a little bit to make some improvements there.
And that'll be $14 a year for students.
That's correct, yeah. And so what we try to do is to maximize all the potential sources and keep things moving forward. Because as I say to students, you know, our goal is that when you're out in the world 10 or 15, 20 years from now and you have your UWL shirt or cap, people say, wow, that's a great school. It's always getting better. So a lot of planning that we do. Also, again, you know, the creative ways of finding the funding and using the space in a wise way. You know, we're the smallest campus in terms of acreage in the UW system. And so we want to make sure we use what we do have effectively. And, you know, that's one of the nice things. We're also going to be doing a new student center, and that'll happen in a parking lot over by Wimberly Hall. Well, long term, we will raise the current building and just keep that as green space. So we're always trying to strike that balance between the facilities and the green.
So some of these new buildings that have been approved, I'm sure people are a bit curious about it. Maybe let's talk about the addition at the Recreational Eagle Center. $7.6 million addition, and as you said before, this is something that was approved by students. So what exactly will be added, and why is it that you think that students wanted to put their own money towards expanding the rec center?
Well, it's important to remember this is an idea that came from the students themselves, and they said we would like more space for courts so we can play court sports, and also more space for some of the cardio machines. And, okay, let's talk about that. Where would we put it? What would it look like? What would it cost? And so we collaborate on that and then finally come up with a price tag. And then how would you spread that out over like 30 years in student fees? What does it look like on an annual basis? And then we do something that I'm really proud of, is we ask the students, do you think that's a wise thing to do? Now, some of the more cynical people, and I hear this from time to time, say, well, of course, students will raise fees if they don't have to pay them down the road. But, you know, that's how we got where we are today, is that, generations make decisions for the future, what is, you know, prudent and wise. And we think that the cost of attending UWL, the total cost, is really a great bargain. And, you know, Kiplinger's recently did a study of schools that charge under $30,000 a year. What are the best values? We were number four in the entire country on the list. So I think we have very smart students, and they care about this institution. And when they see something that they want to have improved, not only for themselves but for the future, we find a way to get that done. And that's what happened in the case of this REC edition.
Some people can be critical of students approving, you know, future fees for future students. So is there ever a time when UWL would say, okay, no more, we're at our limit when it comes to student fees?
Yeah, I think obviously we would. I know certainly the regents, they have to approve this as well. And I've seen them at times say, you know, that fee that you're talking about, even though the students approved it, we still think it's too much. And so let's talk about how to reduce the scope of a project. You know, so and we have to report every year when fees go up more than 3%, there's a quite extensive process there. And the nice thing, and this maybe doesn't get as much attention as it should, the past 2 years, we've held the fees flat. So with the tuition freeze as well, it cost actually a little less to go to UWL this year than it did last year. It's kind of, you wouldn't expect that, but we have been able to do that through some refinancing on some of the parking funding and things like that.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking with UW-La Crosse Chancellor Joe Gao about the new school year. So another project that the Board of Regents okayed was the $24.6 million renovation to Whittock Hall. And as you said, it's over 100 years old. I think it's on the National Register of Historic Places.
It is, yes.
So is that one of the reasons that the university decided to renovate this building? Because, you know, as the university has gone through its changes in recent years, some buildings come down, but this one's being renovated.
The historic register means, you know, you don't have a choice about that. So I don't know that we ever really thought of it any other way. It'd kind of be like Main Hall. The building that I'm in is the original building. We just renovate. I mean, it's always going to be there. And I think Whittock's the same way. What we struggled with is the fact that right now it's really more of an athletic facility than anything else. We have
for
a wonderful
gymnastics
program.
Sure.
And want to keep that strong. And also there's a therapeutic pool in there. And so we had to find places for those activities because the state won't, you know, provide the money to do athletic facilities these days. They want to see that all done like our stadium was, private fundraising. So, you know, we had to think about how can we create a project where we'll get their support and then do something for gymnastics. And so there's a really interesting plan that we're working on that we haven't talked about too much because it's pretty new. But we're going to put – we have talked about the fact the College of Business Administration will go into Whittock, and we think that's going to be great for the future of that college. It's a very important one in the university. And so we'll make that – the home of the CBA, and then gymnastics. Originally, we were thinking about a standalone, kind of what they call a pole barn, which is not too impressive, but could get the job done. And then we thought, gee, you know, looking at all of athletics, really, what does the future hold? And we started to think, you know, it would be great to have an indoor field house that is better than what we have now. We have a indoor track team that wins national titles, men's and women's. We can't even have a meet in there, a championship meet, because it's not big enough and the proper facility. So if we built a new field house, we could take the existing space and cut it up into space for gymnastics, which would be bigger than what they have now, and wrestling and exercise and sports science, and you'd get very modern renovations there, and then this indoor field house, which not only would work for track and field, but also recreational activities that the students who aren't necessarily on a team, if they want to play soccer, they want to play basketball in the winter in particular. And so there's a way to do that. And again, it will involve a conversation with the students about a fee to build that new field house. And we're going to get that going very shortly here. We're going to be talking tomorrow night in the Student Senate about that and see what the senators think. So that looks like a direction that we'll be heading in, but still a little early on
sure.
that.
Even though it's early, is there any sort of projected cost for that or any idea where it would be housed?
There is, and I don't have it with me, so I don't want to misquote, but again, it would be, you know, a modest increase in fees, you know.
And more than a pole barn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. This is going to be, from what I've seen, some drawings and things, a really impressive facility. Now, it would go, and everything is dominoes, and I told you this is pretty complicated, on the area where soccer is played now, and then we would move soccer over to an artificial field that we would create on one of the parking lots in front of the rec center, and then we would do parking beneath underground that field, and we have the engineers and planning people that have all that worked out. So I'm always impressed at how creative our people are.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, I'm talking with UW-La Crosse Chancellor Joe Gao about the new school year. One of the final projects that was just approved by the Board of Regents is this new $30 million residence hall on 14th and Badger. Can you talk about that project and why we need another residence hall even after Eagle Hall went up just a couple years ago?
Yeah, you know, it is really impressive, the demand for on-campus housing. We're a university of a little over 10,000 students, and we have space for 3,300, and we fill that and then some. Eagle Hall, every room in Eagle is a triple room now, and originally that was not our plan.
Is planned to be double rooms?
That's correct. Okay. Now, fortunately, the ceilings are very high, and you can put another bed on a bunk bed arrangement, and it doesn't feel cramped at all. And the students report that, you know, they like roommates and things, and so it works pretty well. But we know that we're going to need more beds, and so we're going to create this new facility. And then again, that'll be funded with student housing fees and a much needed. I mean, I'm sure we will fill that quite easily.
And just even having the extra space and creating more residence hall rooms, beds, the hall itself, I mean, does that allow for the university's admissions to grow by any means? Or
not really. And that's a question I get asked a lot as far as the size of the university. I think we're really pretty close to the optimal. You know, there's great demand. We get 4 applications for every space. So certainly we could take more students, but we want to protect that personalized experience. We've worked very hard over the past 5-6 years to add more faculty and staff to bring down the student-faculty ratio so that people get, you know, when I came here, it was 24-1, which is one of the highest it's the highest in the system and one of the highest in the country. And we've now come down to 20-1, which is a lot more manageable. So we're mindful of that. And then that issue about where do you put everybody, you know, is one that, I mean, we can't really grow over across La Crosse Street because there's a wonderful historic cemetery there. On Campbell Road, the outstanding Emerson Elementary School. Across State Street, you have a nice historic neighborhood. You know, I mean, there just aren't a lot of places where this university could move out into. So we're just making the most of what we have. And I would be surprised if we, you know, ever went above maybe 10,500. I mean, that's now in the future. I don't know, you know, with online education, whether that will continue to boom. I mean, that may have peaked now, and we do some online things, and they're great, you know, for people who like that format. But the traditional come live in a res hall and go study in a class with a professor and play on a team with a coach and get advising from somebody who will sit down and talk with you in person, that's still the big draw on this campus. And I think it always will be, and we're very proud of that.
I'm wondering if you can remind people of the other building projects that are in the works. You mentioned the student union before, which will that be underway this spring?
Yes.
Okay. And then the new science building, which as
that
many of people said was long overdue.
Started early in 2016.
Okay. And then there's the parking ramp addition.
Yep. That one's
that
starting
the Regents just
this
approved.
Summer.
Okay.
Two more levels.
And then you talked about the possible new indoor track facility. Are there other building projects underway? Of course, there's
a
number of
the
renovations.
Wittick renovation.
Sure.
And there's also something called a chiller plant, which will be right near where the new residence hall will be. And that's needed to chill the water to control the temperature in the new science building and the new student center. So you know, there's a lot of parts to this. It is pretty amazing all that we are doing. I mean, when you think about we did the Centennial Academic Building, Eagle Residence Hall, and the stadium and athletic field project. So in about a 10-12 year period, I think the total amount of projects, it's over $400 million. So we've just been very fortunate to be able to get some important things done at a certain point in time. I kind of doubt that this will be repeated anytime soon because it's just, you know, again, there's some buildings that are wearing out and so on. The thing that we will be doing ongoing every summer, we will renovate two of the older residence halls and work our way all the way through that cycle. That's an ongoing project as well. It's extraordinary. I'm glad we have talented people leading these things because sometimes I can barely keep up with it all.
Are other UW schools experiencing this much renovation and I guess building projects as UW La Crosse?
Well, I know that every time I'm in Madison, there are a lot of cranes in the air there, and they're, you know, it's just a constant improvements and things. And I know the other campuses are doing some great things as well. The state, it's interesting, on the capital side, which is the money set aside bonding and then there's debt service and so on, we get very strong support there and are grateful for that. On the operating side, that's where things are much more challenging. And, you know, people will say, let's make an investment in a building. Sometimes they're a little less eager to do that in the people side. And so we wish we were seeing stronger state support for the salaries of our people. You know, the compensation is really lagging a lot of other states. We lose people all the time. Just the beginning of the year here, I learned we lost one of our most talented faculty members who went over to Minnesota. And I used to work in the Minsky system, and I know they pay much better than we're able to do in Wisconsin. So that's something that I guess I'm trying to be even-handed here, and we're grateful for the support for all the buildings, and people see that, and they say you're getting strong support. But on the other side of it, actually what we're able to pay our people and keep things running, that has been challenging.
And you've talked about this, and other chancellors within the system have talked about this for a while now. Is there any sense that this could change and this professors and staff could be compensated for what some of their peers are?
It's hard to say, and I guess I make that comment because things move in cycles. And right now we're coming out of a cycle where there was this great questioning of, is it worth it? Should you go to college? And we had a good conversation on that. But I think most people now say, well, yes, you should. I mean, it might not be for everybody, but the data are pretty clear on, you know, if you look at it just in terms of dollars and cents, for the cost of an education, the return on it in terms of your salary over your career is just exceptional. I think that the other conversation that's still going on is about the rising costs of higher education, and that's what leads, I think, many legislators to be sort of, well, you know, you guys figure that out. We don't really have the money to help you. And, you know, by the way, we think tuition is too high, so let's freeze that. And you know, that's great for students and their families, but it does have an impact on what we're able to do here at the university. And what we'd like to see is a return to the kind of support the state provided, you know, in previous times. But this certainly is not unique to Wisconsin, and it's something that's happening in all of public higher education. But, you know, I think common sense would tell you, well, if the state isn't going to fund it the way it once did, and costs do go up, I mean, utilities, healthcare, technology, how do you pay for that? It tends to be passed over to the students and their families. And that's why, you know, we're doing everything we can to try and hold down that cost. But if you have very little to work with, that gets difficult to do.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, I'm talking with UW La Crosse Chancellor Joe Gao about this school year. I wonder if we should talk enrollment. As you said, enrollment is...
Where is it right now? It's good. Yeah. And it's always a little tricky because... Things happen in this first week where maybe people come who said they weren't going to come, sure, or they leave because there's a family emergency. And so what the federal government does is say on the 10th day of the semester, that's the official census. So we're not there yet. So I don't have the final numbers. But the preliminary numbers, we had a goal of 1,975 students. We actually—
Is that freshman students?
Yeah, first-year students, and came in about five students over that target. On the transfer side, it was 550, and we came in about, the last I saw, like about 20 students below that. So, you know, the overall enrollment of new students is about the same as it was last year, which was a very good year. So we're quite pleased with that.
Another thing I want to talk with you about is this idea of remedial coursework. So UW System President Ray Cross, I guess, addressed the universities and the board recently about all the universities stepping up their efforts in working with college students who need remedial coursework. He had one goal of reducing the number of students who require basic math coursework, and another one of his goals was making sure students who need remedial courses as they enter the universities, they actually finish their coursework in a timely manner. Can you explain what this situation is and maybe what we're seeing at UW La Crosse in comparison to other universities across the system?
This is something that is vitally important because if students come to us and they don't have the basic math or English skills that, you know, we want to see, then they have to take a class, and it's non-credit. So right there, you know, they're spending time doing something that they have to do
time
it, obviously.
Time and money.
But, yeah, and yeah, it's also cost something.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, I mean, obviously a big part of this is what's going on in high schools, and we— President Cross, Ray, is calling for much closer collaboration, and we welcome that. The other thing is what we can be doing before students get here to get them ready. And we are really, it sounds a little dramatic, but we're a pioneer in what's called a massive open online course, a MOOC. And we had the team here at UWL, and they got support from a Gates grant, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So it was a pretty prestigious grant. To create an online remedial, or we call it developmental, math course that anybody of any age, anywhere in the world with a computer, can take this class for free, and it gets you ready to take the test, the placement test on math. And we've seen that people who complete this class and then come here and take the test, they pass it. So it's a really wonderful tool. It's out there. Anybody can access it. So the Regents, yeah, I just had the privilege of being at a meeting, and we talked about that too. Now, UWL, we're very lucky because the demand is high, so we can have pretty tough academic standards. Our remediation, it's only about 2% of the students need it. At some of the other campuses, it can run as high as 40%, into the 40s. So it's a critical issue for the future.
UW-La Crosse Chancellor Joe Gao talking about the upcoming school year. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, Viterbo University is celebrating its 125th anniversary in La Crosse. We'll hear more about its history and future from President Rick Artman. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. And for updates on future shows, links to our archives and photos, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Viterbo University is celebrating its 125th anniversary this year. Since 1890, the Catholic liberal arts school has been educating students in La Crosse. Here today to talk about the school's humble beginnings, religious foundation, and educational future is Viterbo University President Rick Artman. Rick, I'm wondering if you can first take us back to 1890 and tell us about the beginnings of Viterbo, which was not called or considered Viterbo University at
Correct.
That time.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Maureen.
Yes, thank you for being here.
So the sisters came over to the United States from Germany, and we're in Milwaukee for a few years, and were invited by the Bishop of La Crosse to come in and form their religious community here, but also to prepare students to prepare future teachers to teach the students in the parochial schools.
So, and were these fellow nuns that they were educating, or were they also
they were
women
to be sisters within their community?
Okay.
So it was twofold: form their religious community and prepare future teachers for the parochial schools, for the diocese schools. And so the sisters, in their transition, as most religious communities do, they're a Franciscan order, so they're followers of Saint Francis of Assisi from centuries ago. They chose the patroness, St. Rose of Viterbo, Italy. And actually, today that we're taping is the feast day of St. Rose. So if you were in Viterbo today, you would see many, many celebrations going on in honor of St. Rose. So the university was actually named St. Rose Normal School. And Normal School was the name given in those days to institutions that prepare teachers. So we were named that, and in about 1939, we changed to Viterbo College, and in the year 2000 to Viterbo University. But it was the vision of the sisters who came here and decided to establish a college because they wanted to prepare these teachers, but they also wanted an opportunity for young women to be educated in a Catholic college.
So as much as this is the 125th anniversary celebration of Viterbo University itself, it's also really a celebration of the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration.
Absolutely, and I think why we celebrate these benchmarks is to pause and reflect about our history, the past, to give gratitude for those who made the present possible, and then to look to the future about what is our legacy and how do we carry it on. And particularly as the number of sisters decline over the years, it really falls upon the laity to advance the mission and values of the university.
And many of the Franciscan sisters are involved with Viterbo University, but for people who may not be familiar with the work that they do, can you talk about the work that they also do in the community?
Well, they're engaged in many different activities, and they would be better to explain what
sure.
their mission is. But they have a very strong commitment to women, to social justice, to service to the community. And I think in many ways, Viterbo's outreach to the community over the years has been because of the outreach of the sisters. So how do you serve your community best within a Catholic Franciscan foundation? And a particular element of that is service to those less fortunate, particularly the poor. Into issues of justice and countering racism and oppression of those who are less fortunate. And that goes back to Francis's time. Francis believed that you lived the gospel, you preached it by action, And that's been the hallmark and the legacy that the sisters have given us.
So the school that the sisters began back in 1890, as you said, evolved into Viterbo College in 1937. Where did the word Viterbo come from?
Well, St. Rose. So because she was their patron, and it was I don't know the process of how they changed the name, but the mythology is the Mother Superior at the time just decided we would change it to Viterbo. And I think in those days the leadership wasn't quite as democratic as it might be today. So I think one day they said, we're not going to be called Viterbo College. And it's a unique name. There are only three Catholic colleges and universities in the United States named for cities in Italy.
Oh, really?
And Viterbo is one of those.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So once it became a college, what did the school focus on, and how did it evolve from that time once it did become a college?
Certainly, teacher education has been one of those staunch programs, and we have prepared thousands and thousands of outstanding teachers for our secondary and elementary schools, and principals and superintendents as well, which we do a lot more today with licensure programs and those kinds of things. One of the interesting foundations was the nursing program, because Viterbo is probably noted in this region for two programs, our nursing program and our fine arts program. So let me say a little bit about those.
Yeah, of course.
So nursing, the history is that the city fathers came to the sisters in the late 1800s and said that we are seeing a need for a clinic because of the disease and others on the river for the trade and that sort of thing. So the sisters started a clinic. That clinic eventually grew to become St. Francis Hospital, which then was St. Francis Hospital and Skemp Clinic, then Franciscan Skemp, and then Mayo Franciscan, and now Mayo Health System, Franciscan Healthcare. So the sisters started this clinic, and then they were preparing nurses, and so there was the St. Francis School of Nursing for decades. Eventually, in the 40s, the sisters decided that we needed a transition to move the nursing program into the college. And so we celebrated our 40th anniversary as a school of nursing a few years ago. But it was that transition. And we proudly now call those graduates of the St. Francis School of Nursing Viterbo alumni. So nursing became a very prominent part of our curriculum. And as healthcare needs grew in this community and two outstanding institutions, we are proud to be preparing thousands of nurses. About 20,000 nurses have graduated from Viterbo. So it's a great opportunity for us to give back and serve the community.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about Viterbo University's 125th anniversary with President Rick Artman. And I think next you were going to talk a bit about the foundations of the Fine Arts program.
Yes. So not uncommon for a Catholic university to have strong fine arts programs because of religious heritage had a lot to do with music and art. And that was the way that culture was transmitted in the early centuries. When people didn't read, they told stories through art and music. So the sisters had a very strong commitment to the fine arts. And an amazing thing happened in the 1970s, late 60s, is they decided that we needed a fine arts center. And there was no money, but the sisters prayed and said, we will build it and they will come, so to speak. And in fact, they did. So most people in the community know of our tremendous fine arts center and the programs that we have there. We will attract close to 100,000 patrons per year through the Fine Arts Center.
I was going to say, beyond the education, I mean, you're bringing in global acts.
Absolutely, both through our Bright Star, Next Star, the Arts for Young America, and plus our own theater program and music program. So that's been a very strong hallmark of the Viterbo, and that's connected so closely to the liberal arts and our founders, the sisters who founded Viterbo.
So I learned as I watched this fantastic video that I understand your archivist put together, you can find on Viterbo University's website, that has tons of archival videos, photos of the nuns and different students and staff over the years. But in that video, it talked about how Viterbo really took off in the 40s as far as expansion and buildings goes. And then in the 60s was an interesting time in Viterbo's history because lay faculty were hired. Men were first admitted to the university, or I guess it was college still at the time, which I imagine with those two changes, that brings on a whole set of changes.
It sure did, but it was a reflection of the changing times, and I think that's the one thing we can always give the credit to the sisters for, is they changed with the times to still carry out their mission, but they changed with the times and adapted, and that's what the university has been doing since then. So when men came, and particularly GIs came back to college, there was an interest in business programs and graduate education. So our graduate programs began in earnest. The school business was established, and now that's a very large part of Viterbo. For example, this year in the MBA program, we have over 100 students in the MBA program. So we're growing in business even while we continue the strong liberal arts foundation.
So Viterbo now has close to 60 majors, 5 master's programs, 1 doctorate program. How is it that in these 125 years that it has grown and expanded that much?
Very strong commitment from the community, a great board of trustees, generous benefactors in the community as well as our alumni, and I think a drive to make sure we honor the sisters' legacy and to carry on the mission. And our mission today is to prepare students for faithful service and ethical leadership, a great fit for what the sisters originally established Viterbo to be, was a place to prepare young women to serve, and we continue to do that.
And you talked about how there was a community need for nursing and developing nursing students, and the sisters had the Arts Foundation. But when it comes to establishing the business school, the theater department, anything else that Viterbo is now offering, how do you decide, or how did they decide back in the day that these are the programs that we want to have at Viterbo?
Well, you respond to the community's need. I think that's very important. So, for example, we just 2 years ago, or 3 years ago now, started a master's program in mental health counseling. And that was a direct response to agencies who serve the less fortunate, to say, particularly the less fortunate. We need more addiction counselors. We need more people to work in the social agencies. And so mental health counseling, master's degree, we started it, and it's been maxed out every year that we've had it. So most importantly, it's listening, responding to both what the needs of employers are, how we serve the community, and for both traditional and non-traditional students, where do they see job opportunities, career opportunities, and then we try to blend the strong liberal arts foundation with career opportunities.
So once Viterbo College became Viterbo University in the year 2000,
yes.
Correct? What sort of changes did that bring, and how and why does the institution make that evolution?
Well, I wasn't here at the time. I'm in my 9th year, so I think that the question for many would have been, what's the difference between a college and a university?
Sure.
And I think the nomenclature doesn't change the who you are that much. Most colleges have changed to universities today. But the particular concern, I'm sure, because I went through this when I was president of another university, which was a college, is is it going to change the culture of the university? And in particular, is research going to be more important than teaching? Because the traditional research universities had a mission of primarily research. So it was important to say, no, we continue to be a teaching institution. Teaching is our primary business. At the same time, our faculty are expected to participate in scholarship and advance their craft through research and other scholarship activities. But I think that didn't change. Our reward system for faculty is primarily on the teaching and the small classes. We are moving into online education. We know that the demographics are changing. The number of traditional 18-year-olds going to college, especially in the Midwest, is declining. So, again, trying to adapt. And this year we launched 10 new online programs, for
really?
Example.
Wow. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today we're talking about Viterbo University's 125th anniversary with President Rick Artman. So one thing that seems unique about Viterbo University, and maybe it's not unique at other Catholic universities, but is the mission of servant leadership. Can you talk about that and why that has remained so important to the school's mission?
It goes back to Francis, and there's an adage that Francis is known to have said, perhaps he did or perhaps he didn't, was preach the gospel, use words when necessary. So again, it's faith in action, and the gospel life compels us to be in service and to live the gospel through the respect and dignity that we give to each other. So that remains constant. And servant leadership has religious foundations if one reads the servant leadership literature. And it's really about that dignity and respect, and we serve first. So who will be first should first be service to others. And it has a large part of humility in service. And we are so proud of our servant leadership program. We have the only master's degree program in the country on servant leadership. And when we have our servant leadership conversations in La Crosse, we are attracting leaders from throughout the region to come. Certainly listening to Tom Thibodeau is an experience in itself, and Tom is a great ambassador for servant leadership and for Viterbo. But it's been consistent. It's consistent with our mission, and it's consistent with our founding, that that we lead, but we lead because of it's service-oriented.
And in 1999, the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership was established. Why was it? I know that was before your time, but why was that program created?
Again, visionary ideas from the president at the time, Bill Medlin, and also the Reinhardt family and some others who felt that the future of business and leadership in a community has to have a foundation in ethics. And so to establish the institute, there needed to be financial support for it, and the Reinhardt family endowed a large part of the institute. And today it probably far exceeds what those founders' expectations would be. The lecture series that we have, the Holocaust series that we have, the speakers that we bring in for the community. And I'm going to put a plug in for
the upcoming speaker.
Upcoming speaker on next Tuesday, September the 9th, is Captain Richard Phillips, who was portrayed by Tom Hanks in the movie Captain Phillips. So I encourage the community to come out and listen to Captain Phillips' testimony about that experience. And he has a wonderful book, which I've read.
Because he was the captain of a ship, and Somali pirates took over that ship.
Correct. And in his journey really is one of faith and leadership. And I think our audience will enjoy a great talk and an opportunity to meet him. His book will be available, and he will be signing books as well.
And do you think a program like the Institute for Ethics and Leadership, is it unique? And do you think that it has an impact on this community?
I think the uniqueness of our program, and there are institutes at many universities, mm-hmm. is it's focused on servant leadership and ethics and leadership in service to the community. We do some research. We have research fellows who take on research projects, and we do a little bit of publication, but that's not been the primary focus. The primary focus has been to apply ethics and help our business and religious and healthcare community leaders understand how to apply ethics in the day-to-day, in their day-to-day lives and in their day-to-day organizations.
And one way that I understand students, faculty, staff, and alumni are applying those leadership skills is this year, to celebrate the anniversary, Viterbo has a goal of generating 125,000 hours of service within the community, which is a pretty lofty goal.
It is, but we're confident we can reach it with the help of all of our students, faculty, staff, and especially our alumni. So alumni who are listening, we invite you to, when you're involved with a community board or a service project, just to go on the website and click in, and you can add your service hours, and there'll be a running clock timer that will, so to speak, keep adding up all these service hours. So we feel by June 30th, 2015, we will have the 125,000 hours of service.
And is this essentially any type of volunteer work?
Yes, any type of. We're not gonna try to police the hours and do an audit of them. But we know we have ethical alumni and faculty and staff, and they'll. Our students do tremendous amounts of student service, service work in the community. We have a course. Part of the mission seminars is based on service, and so as part of the course, they're out in the community. Every athletic team does community service. So there's so much going on, but we don't always chronicle it. So this is an attempt to chronicle it. We're also going to collect 12,500 pounds of food for the local food banks, and those bins will be put up on the campus and collected all year.
So will these efforts make a difference within the community? Or what sort of difference would it make?
Well, we're not looking for headlines. We're looking for impact. And so I think the difference is made daily by the hours that the people put in and the way they contribute back to their community, whether it's on a board or a service day or a community cleanup or those kinds of things.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio and La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about Viterbo University's 125th anniversary with President Rick Artman. So I know there are a handful of celebrations planned this year. I'm wondering if you want to maybe mention some of them.
I would like to mention that, and this goes back to our founders, that as part of our 125th celebration, the sisters made a very generous gift to renovate our chapel, the San Damiano Chapel. San Damiano is the name of the chapel in Italy where Francis was praying, heard the voice of the cross say, "Francis, rebuild my church, for it is in ruin," in which he tried to do rebuilding brick by brick and finally realized the message was rebuild the church in the hearts and minds of the people. And so sisters made a really generous gift. So we completely renovated that. And this is also the year of the 100th anniversary of the parish church, St. Wenceslas. So we will have a special dedication for those parishioners who were members of St. Wenceslas. But it's a beautiful, new, newly renovated. The theme was noble simplicity, and I invite Catholics and non-Catholics alike to come by and take a look at the chapel. It's gorgeous.
So when you look at Viterbo's future, how much more can it grow, and are you looking to grow?
We think we can grow, and if you're not growing, you're standing still, and nobody stands still and survives today, no matter what kind of organization you are. So, yes, we hope to grow, but it will grow in pockets where there's a need. We see great opportunity in healthcare because La Crosse economy is so focused on the healthcare industry and collateral organizations and agencies. So we think there's great opportunity to grow in with more programs geared to the healthcare. And I think online is going to be in a big growth area for us. But our challenge there is to make sure that it's that we're different from any online for-profit institution, for example. So how do we inculcate the values during that curriculum and during the online experience? How do we make it a personal exchange between an online faculty member and the student? And maybe there's more hybrid where it's face-to-face beginning at the end and online in the middle. But we see that as a necessary growth area. We are a little hemmed in by the borders of our campus.
Like most places in La Crosse.
Right. We've added more residence halls, and we still have a little bit of space to do that. But for the most part, we will grow, but we won't change who we are.
Do you feel like Viterbo's current mission is reflective of its original foundations?
I certainly do, and I think the sisters keep a steady rudder with us. We have a very strong relationship with the community and its leaders, and so there's constant dialogue about how are we staying current to serve the needs, but also being faithful to that legacy.
And I guess it's probably safe to assume that the Franciscan sisters still have a very strong relationship and role to play within Viterbo University.
They certainly do. I mean, corporately, we have a governance structure that includes the sisters, but it's far more than that. It's the prayerful support. You know, I think our community knows the sisters have been praying 24/7 for, I think this is the 137th year.
Sure.
For 24/7, they're praying for our needs as well as the needs of the world. And so we're in constant dialogue and back and forth to make sure we have an annual assessment of how we're doing in terms of our faithfulness to the legacy of the sisters.
You mentioned the celebrations at the religious celebrations. Are there any other celebrations that you're looking forward to in this upcoming year?
We have a great speaker coming in. Dr. Carolyn Wu will be here in November, and she's the president of the Catholic Relief Services International, one of the 100 most influential women in the world by one survey. And we will have a very big gala celebration of the arts in March.
I also saw that this was interesting to me, that the show choir is performing 12 decades of songs in October, which seems like that would be a lot of fun.
It will be, and Nancy Allen does a great job, and we've got such great talent. You know, we opened the Weber Center in collaboration with the La Crosse Community Theater a year ago. And this year down at the Weber Center, we're going to be producing West Side Story.
Oh, wow.
So I think that will be a big hit for our community as well.
Rick, is there anything else you want to talk about or any other things that stick out as you reflect on the history of Viterbo, its place in the community, and where it's going in the future?
I think the most important thing I can share with your audience is Viterbo is here to serve the community, and I hope we're viewed as good partners and collaborators. The Matthey Center is a good example of that. The community, the Weber Center for the Performing Arts. And this year we collaborated with the city for a community policing effort with the Mayo Clinic Health System in Viterbo and in the city of La Crosse. So we have two community police officers, and they're making a huge difference in our neighborhood. So we want to continue that partnership. Resources are limited, and so we have to share. We have to be partnering, and I pledge to our community that we will listen, and we will try to serve the best we can.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on the anniversary. Yeah.
Thank you, Maureen.
President Rick Artman is the president of Viterbo University. We're talking about Viterbo's 125th anniversary. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers. And if you'd like to share comments or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, photos, and links to our archives, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.